From downtown Milwaukee, welcome to Money Talk with Bob Landis. Each week, professional advisors from Landis & Company Investments discuss the latest financial developments, offering timely insight and long-term perspective.
This is Money Talk for February 25th, 2022. Some of this will sound familiar because I can't read a calendar. The Bucks were actually off last week because of the NBA All-Star game. And those three games that I told you about, well, they're this week. The Beijing Winter Olympics are over, but they're still making news. The men's 50-kilometer cross-country ski race was shortened to 30 kilometers. But that didn't help Finland's Remy Lindholm. He needed a heat pack at the end of the race to thaw out a particularly sensitive body part. Because I love my job, we'll just leave it at that. In Tuscaloosa, Alabama, where it hardly ever freezes, a suspicious package was left on the front steps of the federal courthouse. The cops, thinking it might be a bomb, cautiously approached the package. That turned out to be a couple of lunches from Taco Bell. So they were explosives. The mayor of Hudson, Ohio resigned last week after saying that allowing ice fishing at a local park would bring prostitution to the city, which begs the question, what are they using for bait? A belligerent, drunken Florida woman was barred from getting on a flight at the Orlando airport. She left in a huff on her motorized suitcase with the cops on bikes in hot pursuit inside the airport. Oh, please let there be video of this. And from New Zealand, the government has a unique way of dispersing the anti-vaccine mandate protesters. Loudspeakers aimed directly at the protesters blasted an endless loop of Barry Manilow, the Baby Shark song, and the Macarena. Protesters doing the Macarena. Oh, please let there be video of this too. On the podcast today, we have Kyle Tedding, Art Rothschild, Steve Giles, Chris Evers, and wrapping up the week, here's Bob Landis.
Well, thank you, Max. Pretty volatile week, to say the least. NASDAQ added 1.1%, tacking on 147 points to close at 13,695. Meanwhile, in the broader markets, the S&P stock composite 500 up 0.8% for the week, climbing 36 points to close today at 4,385. Dow Jones Industrial Average went against the broader markets, shed only 21 points to close down 0.1%. We ended the week with the Dow finishing at the bell, 34,059 year to date. Dow is down 6, S&P down 7.8, the tech heavy NASDAQ down 12.4. You know, Kyle, when you look at all the volatility that we've seen this week, you try to filter out the news, the war in Ukraine, try to figure out a couple of conclusions here. One is, in my opinion, that it's going to put upward pressure on inflation. You know, I think it's obvious that energy prices are heading higher. Saw one forecast that oil should settle around 120 a barrel. We're a little over 100 now. Heard another economist describe Russia as one big gas station. That there's two things they do. One is export a lot of wheat. They are the world's largest exporter of wheat. Another thing they do is they sell a lot of oil and gas. And you think through the ramifications of that, and you realize, all right, number one, oil is going to go up. Gas is going to go up. Number two, certain food items could go up. But the main point here is on the heels of what I think was just a garden variety correction in the stock market because of higher interest rates, that we're going to look at probably a little bit longer period of time before inflation really comes down. As we spoke a while back, you know, if you look at month over month changes in inflation peaked last October, And I had been of the opinion that I thought inflation would be down to the 2.5-3% range by year end. We now know that the Fed is going to raise 4 times for positive, maybe 5 or 6. And with the upward pressure on inflation, could be a while yet. We also know that the war will disrupt supply chains, which was a big reason why inflation went up. And the point of all this, folks, is that stocks trade based on interest rates and earnings. When interest rates go up, you have a higher discount mechanism. You're discounting future cash flow by a higher interest rate that results in a lower present value. It's just basic math. The stock market is repricing. And I've always been so impressed at how the stock market in aggregate is a very effective pricing mechanism. So the volatility this week, of course, the market turned and finished higher Thursday. That was a miracle. Right after the President Biden talked about new sanctions for Russia and the hope that negotiations could start. Kyle, quite the week. What's your take?
Yeah, a lot to unpack there, Bob. I think, you know, first and foremost, as we talk about some of these inflationary pressures, I think important to point out that 2 weeks ago, the derivatives market was pointing to a Fed that was all but positive to raise rates 50 basis points in March. Fast forward to where we are today, and they've all but ruled out now a 50 basis point move in March. The expectation now for a 25 basis point move. And so I think if anything, the market seems to believe that the Fed is a little bit concerned about what the economic impact of, the spillover effects of a war with between Russia and Ukraine might look like. And so I think, you know, the immediate concern in a war with Russia and Ukraine isn't all that significant from a U.S. GDP perspective. It's all the potential knock-on effects that we can't predict right now that lead to, outcomes that, you know, can't just easily be pinpointed. And so I think the Fed, you know, rightfully right now we're forecasting, you know, that the Fed is a little more cautious about, the path forward, despite the fact, as you say, that the inflationary causes are getting worse, if not better right now. And so I think those two work against each other, but it may point to a little bit why the market was able to rally Thursday, Friday of this week. In particular, as you rightfully point out, the market is long-term an incredible predicting tool with respect to what we expect for earnings and what we expect for interest rates. If the expectation now is that the Fed is going to move a little bit slower, at least early on, that supports higher stock prices. And at least so far, expectations for earnings have not deteriorated at all yet based on what's happening, you know, outside the U.S. I think there is certainly some potential for that to change as we continue to understand what the U.S.'s role is in this, as we continue to understand, you know, how Russia may, continue with cyber attacks here in the U.S. or abroad. But at least for now, you know, the forecast is that earnings continue relatively unabated, that the interest rate forecast now is for a little bit less pressure from the Fed than what we saw. And I think you saw it, you know, in stock prices Thursday and Friday. Of course, the one caution there is that there's still plenty of trouble to deal with. And so if you think that Thursday and Friday's rally was the all clear, that this isn't going to be a big deal, I think, you know, continue to urge caution there, continue to stay balanced, because the reality is we just don't know how this ends. We do know that, you know, there's plenty of stuff we need to worry about as we look ahead.
Steve, let's bring you on the show. What have you been telling clients lately?
Well, sort of as a segue from inflation into balance, I think it has really, really helped to relieve clients' concerns and investors' concerns with respect to all this uncertainty in Ukraine by knowing they've got enough money set aside for annual required minimum distributions, monthly distributions. I mean, we help clients build portfolios where we're giving them the confidence to know where their next 8, 9, 10, 11 years of distributions might be coming from. So all this market volatility, they're really able to take in stride. And the second part of that, and I think investors recognize this, to the degree that inflation begins to become a concern with higher consumer prices, stocks longer term are one of the best hedges against inflation in the first place. It's why we invest longer term. It's to outpace inflation. So those two juxtaposed against one another, having the diversification of bonds to provide you with current income and having the having adequate stock exposure for longer term appreciation is what people get. And it's why they, I think for the most part, have balanced portfolios and aren't panicking as much as you might have thought 25 years ago, or even in 2000, everything crashed after 9/11. And that was a serious panic moment. I think people have learned from a couple of the downturns that we've seen in the past two decades.
Steve, I find it particularly helpful to have investors look at their bond portfolios these days. You know, you in these uncertain times, I think it really helps to look at something where you're certain about. It's important to look at the fixed income part of a portfolio to know that, that's your backup, that's your safety during uncertain times. And for most folks, as you quite clearly pointed out, it'll last years. And as we all know, bear markets on average are over in 23 months, peak to the trough back to the prior peak. Longest one in modern history was 6 years. If you're anywhere close to a 60-40 split and you're behaving yourself on withdrawals, as you point out, you got 9-10 years or more of withdrawals, give or take, depending upon how much you take out, well past the point it normally takes markets to recover. So when things are uncertain, unsettled, I think it's important to focus on, what do you know for sure about your account?
And for those clients, Bob, that are worried about maybe a little bit too much volatility with the portion they do have in stocks, there are ways to get defensive and still have stock exposure. Obviously, we've talked ad nauseum about sector rotation. We're seeing so far this year, NASDAQ and more growthier names under much more selling pressure because of rising interest rates. Yet it's the value side, the Dow Jones, that has held up much better. For those that recognize the need to hold on to stocks, but be in a bit more conservative area, that large cap value space is the most conservative area of the market, and it's still going to give you exposure to stocks longer term.
Arthur, you've been managing money professionally for a very long time now. Well, what's your take on current events, and what are you telling clients?
I think this week is a great week. It's kind of a gut check kind of week. If you had your TV on, you saw the drumbeats of war, increasing in Europe, and the specter of a nuclear-powered Russia invading a smaller country, you could have been tempted to react and sell, which is the wrong thing to do. So I think we have to do the gut check and then be reasonable with respect to, as you guys have discussed, your asset allocations, and realize that you just never know on any given day how the markets are going to react to anything. If anything, the declines that we had incident to the invasion took the S&P down, as you indicated, into correction territory for the first time this year. And so it really became a buying opportunity, technically, for the market, and stocks have risen. One of my favorite examples that you give, Bob, about volatility, which we've seen this week, is the story you tell of putting your hand in a pail of water and you splash it around and there's going to be water all over the place. You take your hand out, everything settles down. So over time, that's what happens to the markets. The uncertainties will become resolved. So I've been counseling clients to just, be still, take it easy, don't worry, not knowing what specifically was going to lie ahead on any given day, but appreciating the fact that this turned out to be a very positive week, despite very negative news.
Chris, I was thinking about you the other day when I read that Ukraine isn't even classified as an emerging market. It's considered a frontier market, kind of a level below the emerging world. And moreover, that Russia is only 3%, give or take, of the Emerging World Index, and you get a sense of how relatively insignificant they are in many ways. You know, we were talking the other day about how the GDP of Russia is only half of the GDP of Italy. I mean, as yet another example. Well, what's your take on this week, and what advice do you have for folks?
Well, I think that's an interesting point, putting that into perspective, the size of those markets. And, you know, if you're an active managing investor as well, you know, many active managers aren't going to have as much exposure to what even the indexes have in Russia or Ukraine, because so many of those are government run gas powered companies, which, you know, we talked about earlier. Not many active managers are that interested in that. So not many investors will have direct exposure. Now, on a week like this, where there's obviously quite a bit to take the headlines and make investors fearful, it's always good to remind yourself on some of the fundamentals of the economy. You know, we got some reminders this week on the strength of the consumer in terms of personal spending that continued to rise in January, north of 2%. And then the other main driver of what has been GDP growth the last two quarters has actually been durable goods orders, which rose again in January, and drove about 5% of the massive 7% number of GDP growth for the fourth quarter. So inventory built was actually a big improvement for the rising GDP number the last two quarters. And I think that's important to pay attention to, because looking forward into the rest of the year 2022 and looking at the components of GDP, well, government spending is probably not going to be a big positive for GDP numbers in 2022 as we roll off a lot of stimulus measures. Consumer spending has been strong, and I continue to expect that that will be the case. And then you need business investment. If you want to see continued growth in the U.S. economy, you're kind of relying on those two pieces as the government pulls back its spending and allows essentially businesses to invest in durable goods and hard investments.
Kyle, one of the only forecasts that I could find this week in predicting GDP came from Oxford Economics. Pleasantly surprised to see that their take now is that GDP globally is going to go down to 3.8% from their prior forecast of 4%. So shaving just 0.2% off of global GDP as a result of the war in Ukraine doesn't seem like a very big number to me, Kyle, in terms of what we're giving up, just 0.2%.
Yeah, you know, I think it highlights just how insignificant the two areas from an economic perspective are to global GDP. Of course, the challenge is that spillover that I talked about earlier. And, you know, you don't get forecasters that are going to predict the types of things that could make that number shift significantly that are, you know, largely unpredictable. What they're trying to do is say, based on what we currently know, what's the impact? And so, you know, I think the reality is we entered this period kind of in a transition, right? That we were hopefully transitioning, especially in Europe, from a period in which COVID has been the primary economic force to a period in which we may be able to emerge and see Europe and in particular the European economy finally emerge from what has been a fairly slow period since the financial crisis. And I think the reality is maybe this pushes back our expectations for non-US stocks a little bit, given that Europe is such a big piece overall of kind of the international exposure for investors. I also think as you look at what was likely to happen with the European Central Bank, with any number of other banks in the region, monetary policy is likely not going to move as swiftly as we earlier thought, the same as here in the US. And so I think, if anything, some more accommodative policy maybe supports that higher number that Oxford is talking about at 3.8 instead of 4, because you aren't having central banks around the world now, you know, taking their foot off the gas or even pumping the brakes the way we had been talking about potentially, you know, before this whole war was as significant as it now is. And of course, you know, anytime we talk about the economic consequences, you know, that says nothing of the casualties of war. It says nothing of the many people in Ukraine right now who I think are dealing with incredible hardships. And so, you know, I don't want to gloss over those kinds of things. It's easy enough as, you know, someone sitting comfortably in my home office right now to forget those things. But, you know, I do think that as we talk about forecasts and predictions, it's worth pointing out that these are small economies, inconsequential to the broader global GDP number. And even the uncertainties that have arisen, at least for now, don't seem to be all that significant. But there's a lot that's yet to be answered.
Clearly, there are still some risks. Number one, risk comes with the potential for much higher energy prices. Could, of course, worsen the global supply shortages. Inflation could clearly go up. But it is worth noting that the U.S. imports relatively very little directly from Russia. So I think that's one of the reasons why the market's kind of headed higher. Kyle, you hit the nail on the head with the realization that the Fed's only going to raise a quarter, not a half, middle of March. That surely helped things. Sanctions are going to help. Good week to look at the fixed incomes out of your portfolio and give thanks for that, because that's not going to jump around a whole lot, and to stay balanced. Well, folks, that's the end of yet another Money Talk. Thanks for listening to us, and we'll talk to you next week.
Thank you for listening to Money Talk with Bob Landis. If you have a financial question you want answered on next week's show, email it to moneytalk@landis.com. To keep informed throughout the week, visit our Money Talk page at landis.com.